From KLCC Studios, this is Oregon on the Record.
I'm Michael Dunn. Since the Surgeon General first came out with its warning, nicotine and the products it's in have been public enemy number one for scientists and healthcare professionals warning of the massive risks and harms from this drug. Yet today, a host of online influencers, even some with medical degrees, are now claiming nicotine can actually be good for you. Not just replacing cigarettes with vaping products that might be a little safer, but telling people to actively go out and ingest nicotine to improve their health. Today on the show, we'll talk to a PhD and expert from the U of O to separate the facts from fiction on nicotine. Then, in the last part of the show, KLCC's membership director will stop by to explain why membership drives are so vital to what we do. That's next on Oregon on the Record. An April 20th article in the New York Times begins, "There's a compound that can reverse Alzheimer's, increase cognitive function, and potentially even help you live longer," Dave Asprey, a biohacking influencer, has told his millions plus social media followers. That wonder drug? Nicotine. A new wave of health influencers like Mr. Asprey, many of whom are aligned with the Make America Healthy Again movement, are championing nicotine as a health product. Today on the show, an expert on nicotine and its health risks from the U of O joins us to cut through the smoke. Lila Woolman, Assistant Professor of Human Physiology at the University of Oregon. Professor, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm happy to be here.
What is nicotine? What does it do to the brain and to the body?
Well, nicotine is a naturally occurring chemical. It's a stimulant. It's found in tobacco leaves. And it exerts its effects on the body by activating something called a nicotinic acetylcholine receptor. So these are receptors that are on many of the cells in the human body. So when someone uses nicotine, it binds to these receptors and activates different processes within our cells, leading to changes in various aspects of our physiology. So for instance, nicotine is most well known for its actions in the brain, where it can essentially rewire the brain, causing nicotine addiction. So this is a serious consequence of nicotine use. However, nicotine acts on many other of our body systems, including the heart and the vasculature, the lung, and even the intestinal tract. Okay. So it has very wide-ranging effects.
Yeah. With regard to that idea or concept of addiction, is there a way to quantify how addictive nicotine is, maybe compared to other substances that we also know are addictive in their nature?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So nicotine is pretty profoundly addictive. It's as addictive as some of the major addictive drugs that we think about, such as heroin and cocaine and alcohol. I think it's sometimes overlooked because it's so highly used in our general population. But I think that also speaks to how addictive this substance actually is.
Okay. You described what it does in the body. Take that a little bit further with regard to the harmful impacts of what nicotine can do. And I want you to answer that in terms of both, on its own, if it's ingested simply in its purest form of nicotine, but then also the delivery system, i.e. cigarettes or vaping products or chewing tobacco, that sort of a thing.
That's a really good question. So first and foremost, whether nicotine is used through cigarette smoking, vaping, the use of nicotine pouches, or any other delivery method, nicotine has the serious potential to cause addiction. So that's what maintains the use of these products despite a person's desire to quit. So having said that, e-cigarettes are likely to be far less harmful than tobacco products such as cigarettes or chewing tobacco because we know that tobacco products are highly associated with cancer. So lung cancer for cigarette smoking, mouth and throat cancers for chewing tobacco.
Sure.
So there is evidence that e-cigarettes or other nicotine delivery systems can be beneficial both for smoking cessation and to reduce the incidence of those cancers. However, that data really isn't entirely conclusive. So on top of that, nicotine, again, independent of the delivery method, is a stimulant that acutely increases heart rate and blood pressure, and chronic use in any form is associated with cardiovascular disease and stroke, for example.
Okay. This might be a question for a linguist as opposed to a physiologist, but I want to talk about the word safe and safer, because I'm wondering, you know, yes, as you just talked about, you know, and certainly they're marketed as safer products. And I guess is that, what I'm talking about is like e-cigarettes or Zyn or those sorts of things, cigarette gum, those sorts of things. I mean, are you comfortable that they're safer but not safe?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes, that's a really, really, really good distinction to make. I think that e-cigarettes and other nicotine delivery devices, their use as harm mitigation substances, I think that's a good use for them. That is not to say that they're safe to just pick up and use for the general population.
Okay.
I think their kind of role is harm mitigation when somebody is a smoker or a tobacco user, as a way to maybe bring down their risk for chronic disease a little bit.
Okay. Well, actually, let me reintroduce you to the audience, talking to Lila Woolman. She's an assistant professor of human physiology at the U of O. One of the reasons I wanted to talk to you is because, and this was sort of new to me, but I was doing some research and found some articles where it seems like a group of people, whether they're medical professionals or just influencers online, and some of them even quite devoted to the what is known as the Make America Healthy movement, or MAHA, that's being espoused by the Secretary of Health and Human Services, Robert F. Kennedy Jr., saying things like, oh, you know, the health scare about nicotine has been overblown. In fact, there are many positive aspects of nicotine. And I wanted to sort of just ask you, as someone who really understands this drug, I mean, you as an expert, do you think that there's a positive, healthful role for nicotine in the body and in society in general?
The short answer to that, I would say, is no. So nicotine it's a complex drug with wide-ranging effects. And there is a growing body of scientific research that indicates that nicotine and nicotinic agents may have some potential benefit in very, very specific instances. So this is controlled in laboratory studies, where the dose and duration of exposure are highly controlled by the researchers and physicians involved. But when people say that nicotine is potentially healthy for the general population, and suggest that there are no, you know, detrimental effects, and people maybe should start using it, they're misinterpreting that literature.
Okay. Certainly, you know, decades and decades ago, before the Surgeon General came out with a very stark warning about the health consequences of smoking specifically, I knew, you know, cigarettes were marketed as this idea that they help your focus or those sorts of things. I did want to ask you about, you know, again, understanding completely what you're talking about in terms of the negative health impacts, but because it's so addictive and people do still enjoy these products, does it help at all in focus and stress reduction? Is that part of the allure that is both a physical manifestation of the drug and also a psychological manifestation?
Yes. So nicotine in the short term can enhance your focus potentially. And it can reduce how you perceive, you know, life stress potentially. And I think it's important to remember that, you know, what happens when you use nicotine or any addictive substance the first time or the second time, perhaps, isn't considering what happens in the long term. And so, for instance, when people are trying to quit smoking, one of the major symptoms that they're trying to alleviate is things like memory impairment and anxiety, which are all these symptomatology of nicotine withdrawal. So the potential for nicotine to increase your focus or relaxation, that becomes this kind of pathological cycle if you enter the point where you're having a problem with addiction.
Okay.
So overall, I think people need to recognize that short-term effects of once or twice using these compounds isn't considering the long-term impact that chronic use has on your health over time.
Okay. You're both an expert in human physiology, and you're also a teacher. You teach young people. And I this is kind of a philosophical question, but I, you know, it seems like maybe it's always been this way, but it seems like fairly recently, and maybe it's because of social media and the fact that anybody can have a platform as a scientist and an educator. Is it a challenge just, you know, sticking or not sticking, but teaching the science and teaching to, you know, best practices in understanding and research when you have movements like this, which, you know, and I'm going to throw it under the guise of, oh, I did my own research and found this to be true. Is it a challenge to have to kind of, you know, not only teach students, but also teach through a lot of this, let's be honest, non-scientific evidence?
Yes, it is a challenge. And I think, you know, what we try to do as the experts in the field is try to get people to trust what the experts say. So in this case, the experts are the physicians and other healthcare professionals and research scientists that have dedicated their careers to understanding human health and disease and the consequences of nicotine exposure. And so these are the people that we should be turning to for our healthcare recommendations. So the overwhelming consensus from, let's say, the American Medical Association is that nicotine use is very likely to lead to addiction and poor health outcomes. So another aspect of what you just mentioned is people doing their own research. And so I do think it's like really important for people to go out and, you know, read what's available and advocate for themselves and their health and things like that. But I think it's really critical to really look at where you're getting that information. And, you know, as I just said, the physicians and health professionals and researchers who've dedicated their life to understanding this problem are who we should be listening to.
She's Lila Woolman, Assistant Professor of Human Physiology at the University of Oregon. Professor, really appreciate you coming on and talking with us.
Thank you so much. It was my pleasure.
KLCC's membership director joins us now to give us the 411 on membership drives at the station. Brooke Bumgardner, the director of membership and outreach for us here at KLCC. Brooke, great to see you in studio. How are you?
I'm great. I haven't been in the studio since our membership drives.
Which I want to say, this is not a membership drive. I want to make that clear, but I did want to talk to you about it because it's very important. And I want to start with the very basic question that some people may not know the answer to. Why do we hold membership drives?
You know, it's a longstanding tradition in public radio, mm-hmm. of course, but we don't just stand on tradition. It's something we actually really need to do. You know, our core service to this community is to provide local, trustworthy reporting, conversations and exploring ideas and information. And we're also stewards of KLCC, you know, mm-hmm. as employees, and we have a board, and We're all here to do that initial job, but it also means that we have to ensure that we have resources to meet our community's needs. And so the membership drives are a time when we invite listeners and readers to join us in that effort. Yeah.
I like sometimes to have my guests do some myth busting, and I want to give you that opportunity because might be people who sort of have some or believe in some myths about our funding model, and many folks just might not be aware our funding isn't as diverse as it once was. Talk about
that. One of the things I like about membership drives is people call in with, and then they share what they have thought, you know, our funding model looks like or what their understanding is. And like with all industries and fields, the people inside have a deep understanding of it, and the people all around us who are participants in some way don't necessarily. So a lot of people think that NPR pays us. And while I so wish that was true, that's not how it works. So NPR creates, you know, these terrific programs, and they have their reporting, and we pay NPR to air that information or provide it on our website. A lot of people think that we're still maybe receiving funds from the government or, you know, don't fully understand what happened last July, for example.
Sure.
And we are 100% community supported. So that comes in the form of, you know, whether it's community grants from private foundations or business support. But by and large, it's support from community members. So who are also members of KLCC. And I'm not sure I'm answering your myth question.
No, you are.
Question.
You are. Yeah. Well, I think probably because we are, for example, our call sign is KLCC.
All right.
And we have a very important partnership with LCC, but they don't fund us directly, do they?
That's true. Right. You know, we are part of them. Mm-hmm. And there's some services that, you know, as a license holder and organization, we partake in those services, whether it's, you know, we use their printing shop, for example, things
sure,
like that.
Sure, exactly.
But we also pay for those, so some of those services. But yeah, we are, you know, student fees and tax dollars and whatnot that go to LCC do not come to KLCC.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So you're the membership drive head honcho. You have all the touch points when we do a membership drive, and you have the most direct interaction a lot of times with members or people or listeners. Talk about some of the things that they tell you when they call in to make their pledge.
Yeah, it's been interesting how it's changed even just since my time here, which has been about 4 years. This last pledge drive, it's kind of a celebration. There's a lot that goes on behind the scenes. It is a lot of work and it takes time, but we actually really like it. It feels a little bit like a party in Pledge Central. And when people call in, it's a time for us to talk to them, hear about what's on their minds for their neighborhoods, their communities, what's important to them, and what role KLCC plays in their daily lives, whether it's I listen while I drink my coffee or I really, really rely on you folks. So we heard a variety of things this past pledge drive. A lot of people really appreciate our increased local coverage, and they're recognizing that our news staff has grown, the reporting coverage has grown. You know, we have Brian out on the coast. Macy is doing a lot of coverage from the Corvallis area, Nathan Wilkes coverage of Coffin Butte, as well as some really critical issues here locally, like the peace health situations and all of that. So they expressed appreciation for our local reporting and coverage.
Brooke, the term member and membership, talk about that in terms of the importance of it. I mean, we could refer to folks as donors or customers, but we don't. They're members. Talk about what that means to you, but also to the station in general.
Yeah, it is interesting because they are somewhat clients or customers. You know, they are on the receiving end of what we are able to put out into the world, and they are also donors and supporters. But they are essentially, and most importantly to me, members. We're all on a team. So it's not, I kind of think of it as, you know, like the recycling circle or something. You know, they're not just supporting us and then we do something with their funds and, you know, we make something happen. It's kind of a feedback loop. You know, they are part of the team that makes sure we have resources to do this work. And then we have people who are skilled in what they do, like reporters and programming hosts and our chief engineer, who do that work, not just for us, but then for the whole community.
You know, there's big news about a huge check that donors made to NPR. What is that going to mean for us?
Yeah, so recently we learned that NPR received two very substantial gifts, totaling $113 million. For KLCC and our local community, what it means is not much right now.
Okay.
NPR's intention and the donor's intention is to invest those funds into kind of a digital, I don't want to say transformation, but like deepening and allowing NPR and thus the member stations like KLCC mm-hmm. to better serve our audience and our communities through kind of more digital options, meeting people where they're at, and it's an investment in that infrastructure.
A federal judge has blocked the Trump administration's executive order that impacts public media. Talk a little bit about that and what that might mean.
Sure. You know, it is kind of confusing because people, you know, I had a relative reach out and say like, oh my gosh, you got your funding back. It's like, I so wish this was true. But what it means, it's a win for the free press. So the executive order was kind of based on not funding public media on this idea that, you know, they're doing partisan coverage or that we are doing partisan coverage. And debating that aside, whether or not the coverage is partisan, this judge ruled that you can't defund public media based on that. Mm. However, the executive order is very different from that rescission package that Congress had passed. So there is, you know, it's Congress that makes the budget. It allows for a future Congress to re-include funding for public media, but that's not, you know, that's not happening this summer. It's not happening in the near future. But it kind of just says this is not done, but there's still a fight that needs to be happening, or a quest, I guess I should say. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, she's Brooke Bumgardner. She's our Director of Membership and Outreach at KLCC. Brooke, always great to talk to you. Thanks so much for coming
in. Thanks for having me.
That's the show for today. All episodes of Oregon on the Record are available as a podcast at klcc.org. Monday on the show, South Eugene High School is one of the top high schools in Oregon. We talk to the principal about what's working at South. I'm Michael Dunn, host of Oregon on the Record. Thanks for listening.